Yale Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Yale Institute of Sacred Music Podcast, a series exploring the interdisciplinary intersections of music, worship, and the arts. In this episode, the conductor David Hill talks to two members of a team that newly transcribed and edited a Palestrina Mass that had been gathering dust for more than 425 years. We will hear a movement from the work as performed by Yale Schola Cantorum in a recording on the Hyperion label, available on their website.
That was from the Kyrie of Palestrina's Missa Confitebo Tibi Domine, a work that was copied into the papal choir book in 1577, when Palestrina was the official composer at St. Peter's Basilica. It was published in 1585 and then over 425 years later, newly transcribed and edited for this recording by Yale Schola Cantorum, released on the Hyperion label. I'm here today with two members of that transcribing and editing team. Bruce Dickey is a performer and researcher who has devoted his career to 17th century performance practice and the revival of the cornetto, a once forgotten period brass instrument. David Recker is on the voice and opera studies faculty of Purchase College and conducts several choirs. He is known for his commitment and passion for historically informed performance practice of music from before 1750. And he worked on this Palestrina project for Schola whilst completing his studies at Yale. Welcome both. Bruce, would you start by telling us how you set about compiling and arranging the music to fit around the Palestrina Mass?
Yes, when I was asked to participate in this project, I thought right away of the several existing sets of diminutions on motets of Palestrina, where the canto line and sometimes the bass are provided with elaborate embellishments. There are, I think, three by Giovanni Bassano, who was cornetist and leader of the instrumental band at St. Mark's in Venice, and one by Riccardo Rognoni, viola bastarda, virtuoso in Milan. Ultimately, I decided to play two of the ones by Bassano because, as you can imagine, they fit particularly well on the cornetto. But since one of my favorite things to do in order to vary and expand my performing repertoire is to create my own diminutions on motets, I thought it would be interesting to make my own version of another Palestrina motet, Loquebantur variis linguis, which I chose because the tessitura of the canto line allowed me to move freely both above and below the written notes. For this diminution, I decided to use a slightly later style than the versions of Bassano from the 1580s, borrowing ideas from treatises at the end of the 16th century by Giovanni Battista Bovicelli, Riccardo Rognoni, and the cornetist Luigi Zenobi. This choice led me to employ more dotted rhythms and various versions of an ornament called the accento, which uses the upper neighbor in descending by step. But the procedure that I use in creating these kinds of diminutions is one of moving back and forth frequently between the computer, where I basically compose segments of ornamental lines, and the cornetto, where I try them out, verify their playability, and make improvised modifications. Then back to the computer to incorporate the new ideas. But when I have the chance to play with a beautiful Renaissance organ like we did this in this case, I love to play the top line of a polyphonic texture, either ornamented as in the case of these diminutions, or unadorned, simply trying to become part of the organ. The Italians called this suonare nell'organo, playing in the organ as opposed to with the organ. And it also always calls to my mind the English chronicler John Evelyn, who said after the Restoration that we hear no more of the cornet which once gave life to the organ. So I like to think that in playing this top part to a polyphonic texture on the organ, I'm becoming part of the organ and giving it life.
Great. So let's just hear a short excerpt of one of these interpolated movements for cornetto and organ. Loquebantur variis linguis, the apostles speaking in many languages. So let's turn our attention to the Mass itself. David, what can you say about this Mass and its significance in the canon of Palestrina's output?
Well, regarding Palestrina's output, it's particularly vast. We have something like 104 securely attributed Mass settings and well over 300 motets. The overwhelming majority of these Masses are scored for 4 to 6 voices. But Missa Confitebor Tibi Domine stands out in that it's one of only 4 written for 8 voices. That is to say, double chorus, a style that would be coined cori spezzati. Palestrina's Masses in general can be grouped into several categories. A cantus firmus Mass is based on a pre-existing melody, whether taken from the body of Gregorian chant or plain song, or even secular melodies, Missa Lomar Me, for example. If the given melody is treated strictly contrapuntally, as in his Missa ad fugam, it might be called a canonic Mass, though some of these terms are overlapping. There are Masses which are freely composed, not based off a model, such as the ultra-famous Pope Marcellus Mass. And then there are those based off an entire polyphonic texture, known as parody Masses, such as the piece on this wonderful recording. In fact, Palestrina has taken here as a model one of his own motets, which is where the Mass draws its title. I find this so-called parody technique to be most fascinating. Rather than strict quotation of the given model, it more utilizes bits and pieces of the entire texture. Many aspects are changed or redistributed, but in the reweaving of the contrapuntal lines from the model, you get an entirely new piece, but one that is still permeated with the sound of the original. Sometimes motives are repositioned to line up with structurally significant text. Other times the thread of the original completely disappears for a moment. It really keeps you listening. If we look at the aforementioned motet, Confitebor Tibi Domine, we see at the start a double chorus texture. The first chorus begins, answered by the second, but after that point to the end, all 8 voices are employed interchangeably and in various combinations, irrespective of chorus. It's only in the Mass setting do we hear truly antiphonal writing, and gloriously so. There's a tremendous amount of interplay and passing back and forth of motives, both rhythmic and melodic. In fact, Palestrina assigns entire extended passages to one choir or the other, as in the Credo movement. The Crucifixus is sung by Choir 2, and later the Et Ascendi is sung by Choir 1. And then the moments when all 8 voices are deployed, it's a huge payoff. Palestrina throughout music history has been praised for his carefully controlled, beautifully balanced style of writing. Unlike a composer like Lassus, whose works abound in dramatic contrasts, Palestrina's works gradually unfold. There's a strong sense of unity from start to finish, and while there is attention to rhetoric and text painting, it rarely upsets the overall texture. Dissonances are treated with similar care, being relegated to weak beats or weak parts of beats, each consciously prepared and resolved. Unlike Monteverdi, cadences tend to be few and far between, favoring long, sculpted passages. One of my favorite aspects of Palestrina's writing is the idea of compensation. When there's a leap in the melodic line, it's most often preceded and followed by a change of direction. The disturbance of the leap is balanced by a gesture in the opposite direction. Take, for example, the opening of the Agnus Dei. The opening upward leap in the soprano line is immediately compensated, which in turn helps prepare the upward scale of nearly an octave. And more broadly, as each voice enters, it is counterbalanced by contrary motion in the other voices. All of this adds up to an amazingly seamless texture, and I think this recording in particular captures this beautifully.
Thanks, David. So let's now listen to Yale Schola Cantorum perform the entire Kyrie movement from this new transcription of Palestrina's Missa Confitebo Tibi Domine. The recording is available on the Hyperion label from their website. We hope you enjoyed this podcast and will be interested in others in the series from the Yale Institute of Sacred Music. And thanks for listening.